Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, I'm Callum Stodman, and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly look at what's new and what's going on and what's trending in the world of tech from a blind and partially sighted perspective. As we always say, it's your program, so if there's anything you want to talk about, anything you want to get in touch with us, any tips or comments that you've got, you can drop us an email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. You can send a written email or send a voice note if you want to. Just attach that to your message. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. This week, we'll be talking about the wearable mobility aid Noah from Biped. We'll be hearing the tech timeline of RNIB Connect Radio's Jake Hart. Plus, we'll be tackling some of your emails. We have Hubert Pavalkovic and Jackie Brown joining me this week, usual co-hosts. Let's find out what's new this week. Jackie, what have you got for us?
Okay, well, I discovered the other day that British Wireless for the Blind Fund are ceasing their app, speech radio, and also the skill on the A-Lady. So these are going to be made defunct as we go through the summer. Basically, they've said the take-up is quite low, and therefore they're not going to continue to develop either speech radio or the Amazon Echo skill. I think this is a bit disappointing because a lot of the apps like TuneIn and MyTuner Radio, they can be a little bit clunky. They are usable, but they can be a bit clunky to get around. And speech radio did, to be fair, to have quite a nice interface once you signed up and signed into it. Then, especially on iOS, it wasn't as good on Android, to be fair. It was very difficult to get to the favorites button to delete or add to favorites. The iOS version certainly was very, very doable and quite nice, but they have decided that they're no longer going to support it. So that's news hot off the press, and that's a real shame.
Yeah, that is a shame. I mean, I wonder if part of this, certainly from the skill point of view, is that there is so much built in, because the Amazon Echo by default uses tuning radio. And although the app is not great, it used to be brilliant to tune in, but it's really gone downhill, certainly on iOS. But on the Amazon Echo, for the most part, it just works. You know, you ask for a station and it just plays, obviously in an ideal world. There's always glitches and issues, but I just wonder if there's not really been much of a need for the skill or not much knowledge about it. But as for the app side of things, it's a shame. There is something kind of special about an app that's designed specifically to be accessible, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, it is rather disappointing because it hasn't been around for a really long time, and they have had other tools that you could access radio, internet radio. For instance, the Sonata was on the go for quite a long time, and then they had a tablet called Bumblebee, which was also, you know, made and designed with software that was easy for people with some sight to use. So they have had a go at it. And my only concern, obviously, is that they will have their own reasons, but it just feels like, because they're a charity, you know, how much has been invested in all these different things they've tried, you know, where they started off as an organization to allow people to borrow radios. You know, in the past, we all loved the Roberts radio with all the buttons on the front that was so accessible, with shortwave and longwave and FM and medium wave. Of course, now radio is very different, and it just feels quite a shame that they've clearly invested a lot of money in developing these things, and now they're just no more. So we're always looking for alternatives, of course. And I know you did a piece about broadcast last year.
Yeah, so if you are looking for an alternative, I can highly recommend Broadcasts. That is a really good app. It's not specifically designed for the blind. It's a mainstream app, unlike this speech radio one, but it is really accessible, really simple, just a really nice little interface. You don't have to create an account on there, although I think you can do if you want your stations to sync across. But yeah, we did a demo of that quite a few episodes back, but it should still be on the feed if you want to if you want to scroll back a few weeks.
I think you have to pay if you want the premium version of it now. Don't is there not a subscription or a charge?
I think there was for some features, yeah. I don't think it was much, but yeah, I can't remember. I might listen to my own demo and remind myself what that was. Hubert, have you got anything for us?
Well, it's worth talking about the Apple event that took place on the 9th of June. Yes, WWDC, the elephant in the room. And I attempted to watch the event on the train, which was quite successful, bearing in mind the signal on trains. I don't know if you've guys followed it, but to me, there was a lot of good features announced. However, a lot of it felt like catch up with competitors. I felt there were great features, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of good, interesting features announced, such as, the various new improvements to the phone app where you can get call screening and hold assist, which all seemed quite positive. But what struck me was that a lot of these features, you're kind of going, well, other companies had that X number of months or years ago. And as much as I'm glad to see it, it was a bit of a concern, but I did like the features. Like, call screening is excellent because some of the unknown calls I get, I don't answer numbers that I don't recognize. So it'd be good to be able to screen them and go, well, let's see what they want before I get to answer a call.
Yeah, so this is a feature where it's not available yet. All of these features that we're talking about will be coming out in September with iOS, well, iOS 26. They've changed the naming convention now.
Yep, they've renamed it.
That's going to take some getting my head around. We'll come back to that. But this call screening is where, similar to what we've had on landline phones for a few years, where it will prompt someone to leave a message before they get connected and it starts ringing. So basically, it will, I'm sure it'll be more elegant than this, but it will basically say, what do you want? And they can leave a recording explaining who they are. And then it will connect the call and you'll see that along with who's calling. You'll be able to see that message. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that because there is a feature where you can, in the settings, there's a silence unknown callers option. But what that will do is, if there's a number that calls you and it's not in your contacts and not in your recents, I think it goes off your recents as well, it will just throw it over to your voicemail. And they can leave a voicemail, it doesn't block that. But it's kind of all or nothing. And there are so many times where a number that you don't recognize or you're not expecting will call you, but for a genuine reason. So that feature has always seemed a bit pointless to me. But hopefully this will improve it.
I think the Braille side of things is going to be interesting. This Braille note taker, that I can't quite work out what to think about that and how that's going to work, but that's going to definitely be something to watch. And the idea that you can have BRF files, and be able to open them, I believe that's one of the things as well. So that has a lot of potential, but it depends, when we see it, what's going to happen with that.
It's one of these features where, as I said, I think when the accessibility features were announced near Global Accessibility Awareness Day, I'd love to see more of it in action because at the moment the whole Braille note taker feature, it's kind of shrouded in mystery because we've got the name of it and how and what it claims to do, but not really how it works. I think that will be quite interesting. The other highlight for me certainly was live translation, especially in messages. Now, for me, now I quite often message with my family back in Poland, which means switching between languages, voices, and keyboards. Now, if this feature works as smoothly as demonstrated or on during WWDC, that will make things so much easier to message people in other languages. I think that's a huge improvement to communication on paper.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that can work within phone calls as well, which sounds quite cool. So if you're on a call with somebody in another language, you would speak and then they would get a spoken voice of that translation.
Yeah, it's an interesting experience because the way it was demonstrated is you speak a phrase, then that will get, then the person on the other end will get a translation, then they will reply, then it will translate it and then play it back to you. So it's not a seamless process, but it is better than not having it at all, is the way I see it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of these features to me, when I first, because I didn't watch the event, but I did read some of the highlights. And if you're interested, by the way, Apple Viz have got a brilliant summary. They always do have really good summaries of the Apple events, particularly from an accessibility point of view. If you go to appleviz.com/blog, it might not be when you hear this, but at the time of recording, it's the most recent blog at the top of their feed. But even if it isn't, it shouldn't be too far down. So you can read that. But when I first read it, I thought, not much Apple intelligence here, is there? I was expecting Siri to become like Gemini. Well, I wasn't expecting it, but I was wanting it. But then actually, when you think about it, the things that they are putting it to use for is actually pretty cool. Like this live translation and hold assist feature, which again sounds pretty intriguing. What do you think? Do you think they're going down a more, using AI in a more productive way rather than a flashy way, I guess?
I hope that is the case, because at the moment, the main things we're hearing is how Apple is behind with its AI kind of side of things, with its Siri side of things. So, and they probably are. You can easily say that from experience, they are not as certainly where other things are, like Google Gemini and that sort of thing. However, it does seem that their AI implementation from Apple is in a lot more practical kind of sort of style, which I think is equally as important. So maybe they are behind in other ways, but also they are approaching AI from a very different angle, which, you know, I think could be quite an interesting outlook.
Obviously, the proof is in how well it actually works, right? And I guess we'll hear that during the beta phase, but we'll see that in September when they're all released. And just quickly on the names, so they've all gone to, I assume, the number of the year, mainly, because they're going to be iOS 26, watchOS 26, iPadOS 26, and macOS. Well, macOS has still got a name, but the overall number is going to be 26, which is quite nice, because at the minute I kind of go, yeah, so I'm running iOS 18, or watchOS 9, 10, and then don't even get me started on macOS. I don't have a clue what the numbers are on that. So it's nice to see that that's going to be a bit more unified.
Yeah, I think consistency is quite valuable. And the other important mention, especially from the low vision perspective, I've seen a lot of concerns from low vision users about this liquid glass, translucent sort of visual look on Apple interfaces. Now, there is information that this can be adjusted, hopefully. So if Apple have done it right, then low vision users should still be able to customize the look and hopefully avoid the liquid glass look, because the big concern mentioned was about being able to read text on the screen with that sort of translucent liquid glass redesign. But from what I've heard, we hopefully should expect it to be at least either adjustable or turned off completely if you want to do so. But I guess, again, as you said, Callum, that will probably become out clearer more in the beta versions when people get their hands on it.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, let us know, what were your highlights from WWDC? Is there anything you're looking forward to? Do you wish they'd have made better use of this Apple intelligence? Let us know what you think. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
With me today is Stuart Beveridge, who is Head of Accessible Technology at Seascape in Fife, Scotland. Hi, Stuart. Thanks for coming to the programme and having a chat with us.
Hi, Jackie. Not a problem at all.
Now, you have been putting together a series of really good mini podcasts on NOAA. So Before you go into what the podcast do, can you tell us a little bit about NOAA and how you're getting on with it? What does NOAA stand for?
Yeah, so NOAA stands for Navigation, Obstacles and AI, and it's a wearable mobility aid. Now, when I say mobility aid, it's not a primary mobility aid, so it's not intended in any way to replace a guide dog or a white cane, but what it's designed to do is to work, I suppose, alongside your primary mobility aid. So, as I say, navigation, obstacles and AI, we'll probably say that a bit more in the recording, but it will navigate you to up to 10 favourite destinations. So I've got 10 favourite destinations programmed into the device through its companion app, and it will tell you, you know, if you're going along the street, continue ahead, turn left at 9 o'clock, etc. And it will also try now and give you locations to where you are. So it would tell you you're on Main Street, cross Bank Street on your right, etc. So really, really stellar navigation, really precise navigation up to, again, probably about 10.5 meters. The obstacle sounds, what it does is for obstacle detection, you really need to wear this with headphones to get the idea, but it gives you obstacle sounds in 3D, and you can program the device to detect obstacles up to 1 meter away, 2 meters away, 4 meters away, etc. And it looks for these obstacles using its camera, which is always looking in front of you, but it also looks to your right and left. So if you hear a beep or a click sound in your right ear, you know the obstacle's on your right. If you hear it in the middle of your head, you know the obstacle is, or in both headphones, should I say, then the obstacle is in front of you. And if the obstacle is in the left, obviously you'd hear it in your left earphone. But it's the AI which really takes more things into account now. It's really went a bit mad, the AI, because before it would give you scene descriptions. So using the buttons, you can have a short scene description and it tries to tell you maybe why your guide dog has stopped, really what's directly in front of you. And it tries to tell you if there is a clear path ahead. But then you can have a long scene description as well where the detail, because of this three-dimensional camera, you know, that's looking in front, right and left, it picks up your surroundings better than anything I have ever seen. And then sorry, Jackie, on you go. I'm talking too much.
No, it's really interesting. I know from the series of podcasts that you've been doing that, you know, you're really taken with this device. But I was going to ask you to describe to some people who maybe haven't heard of NOAA before and maybe don't know anything about it, what it is that you do with it. This is a wearable device, isn't it?
Yes. So there's a control panel on the right that goes over your shoulders, basically. And then there's a control panel on the right, and there is this camera on your left with three panes of glass, as I say, that looks in different direction, each pane of glass. And then there's a battery pack that sits behind your neck. So what it does, when it's on and the device is worn correctly, on the right there are two buttons for navigation, two buttons for obstacle detection, and two buttons for the AI side. And pressing these buttons on the NOAA device itself lets you accomplish different tasks I've been describing earlier on. There are other buttons as well. There's a power button, obviously, and that has a sleep mode function within the power button as well. And then there's a confirmation button. So loads of different buttons. There's about 10 buttons on the device, but it is literally, once it's on, I mean, you know it's there. You can feel it on your shoulders, but once it's on, you just put your phone away in your pocket. You do need a phone and you need the NOAA companion app to kind of run the device, if you like. But once it's on, you just put your phone away in your pocket and let the buttons do the rest. So you've got one hand holding onto my guide dog and the other one, if needed, can control NOAA.
Okay, so if somebody goes out and it's absolutely belting it with rain, is not waterproof. Can you wear it over a coat, or is it?
Yeah. Okay. You can wear it over any clothing. You could wear it over a jacket, etc. Now, the only thing is, if you're wearing this and it rains, I mean, it's so precious that I wouldn't take it out in the rain. But it probably wouldn't work anyway, because the water is going to, you know, if it's torrential rain, the water's going to run down the cameras. See what I mean? So it's going to obscure. This is very, very high-tech, you know, computer vision camera technology. So it's a bit like, you know, having a car but with no windscreen wipers, you know.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't take it out in the rain, but, you know, I wouldn't take it. I don't think any camera technology really would work in the rain. And I suppose that's the drawbacks of using this sort of technology in any device, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm totally with you there. I understand that. The other question that I've been asked about this device is, if you are walking with someone else, say you're walking with a partner, or you're just holding on to somebody's arm, you link with them, does that in any way affect Noah when you're walking along? Does that inhibit you in any way with the cameras?
It doesn't seem to. It actually doesn't seem to. I've never saw that before, and I've been walking wheel with it with my mum, and it's because obviously you can set the obstacle detection ranges and things on it as well. So, you know, unless my mum was, you know, maybe a good arm's length or two ahead of me, then I don't think it's because of the angle of the cameras that's really difficult to explain. People need to really get it in their hands, Jackie, and actually see this thing for themselves. But to my note, it's because of the angle of the cameras as well. It should not pick up anybody else if you're using sighted guide.
Yeah. Well, you've been putting together a series of podcasts, very short podcasts, but very informative, with some demos. I've listened to all of them, of which I think there are about 16 now, at the time we're recording this. And I'm quite impressed with the way that you've been able to put it across. It's not always easy. It depends on the circumstances that you're in when you're out and about with your dog, and you're wearing Noah. But if anybody wants to take a listen to these, then they are well worth listening to. So it's called NoahCast, NoahCast. And Stuart does, as I say, about 16 of them at the moment. And he goes through different settings on the device. So he demonstrates doorways, grass verges, text, all sorts of stuff. You tell the listeners, Stuart, what Noah covers in the different sections of the device.
Well, it covers mainly a few information episodes, just to give people an idea of, you know, what the device is, the two batteries that come with it, etc. But very quickly, I mean, really, the podcast is, I want to share what Noah is doing for me as a user. So I very quickly fly and move on to the navigation features. So one episode's on navigation, and I like to hear people hear the sounds of the navigation, what Noah's telling you to do, you know, what buttons to press, etc. And it all comes through a little Bluetooth speaker aware that then just feeds into the microphone I've got clipped on. So it's not perfect, but it's the best I can do with it at the moment. So you've got episodes for navigation. You've got an episode, for example, on obstacle detection sounds. So you can hear the sounds the device makes. And then there is a lot of episodes on the AI features, of which there are now quite a few. And more will be coming, because there has just been a massive update to Noah, where they have introduced live real-time AI, which is really quite something. Yeah. So I'm still testing it at the moment, but hopefully at the point of this recording, there still should be more than enough for people to have a good idea of what Noah can do.
So, Stuart, what's your What's your primary use for Noah? What feature do you find particularly useful about this device?
So what I would say is, I think people need to kind of, on my background a wee bit, Jackie, if it's okay. I mean, I've used belts that go on your waist and vibrate and tell you which direction to go in. I've used smart canes for obstacle detection. I've used apps and smart glasses for scene description. But I ended up going out and I felt as though it was like a human Swiss Army knife because every, you know, I didn't know what bit of me was doing what. But the point is, they're all doing different things. And what I have never had is one device that does everything
that fits all.
Once.
Yeah.
And that is what Noah does. And when you combine, you know, the navigation and the obstacle detection features, they are unbelievably good. But then where I've always struggled is, if my guide dog is stopped, he can't tell me why he's stopped. He can't communicate why he's taken a different path or won't move. Or take him into the road, for example, and that's where the AI scene descriptions come in, you know, to give you that idea at the touch of a button. Okay, I think your guide dog stopped because he's ahead. So, you know, to have that side. And then when in a cafe, for example, and now without even sighted assistance anymore, using Noah, because of its cameras, it can detect empty chairs.
Yeah, it's for fantastic.
You know, so, I mean, I've demonstrated this to people at Guide Dogs, and the lady was sighted, and I asked the lady once I'd finished, is this doing everything it should be doing? And she was absolutely blown away by it. So again, that's what the podcast is just trying to get over, is why.
Yeah, and it does. It does very well. They're short and sharp and to the point, and you demonstrate each feature of the device and the AI features of it really well. So it is definitely worth listening to if you are in the market for a GPS piece of kit and you know, it has all these features that you're saying. But obviously the big elephant in the room here is the price, and this is the problem with all these devices, is that they seem to be going up in price for every device that comes out, whether it be a cane or a wearable or whatever. It seems to, you know, that the price is very prohibitive for a lot of people. So to your knowledge, Stuart, what are we talking about in terms of money?
So it is on the Sight and Sound website, who are the UK distributors. In UK money, it's £4,000. There is a subscription model as well, but to be honest, I don't know enough about that. You'd have to call Sight and Sound to see about that. But I mean, all I can say, I mean, this is a considered purchase. Honest, isn't it, Jackie? You know.
Yes, it is. But if it works for you, Stuart, this is the thing. It's all very well to say how much these things cost, but if it works for you, the user, and you are comfortable with the, you know, being able to justify the cost, and you can use it, then if it makes your life easier, then, you know, I say, well, that's entirely up to the individual. It's not for anyone else really to criticize. Oh, well, that's just ridiculous spending that kind of money. It isn't, if it's going to work for you. So my final question really, Stuart, is the app, the companion app, I'm assuming that has to be completely accessible using it on iOS and Android, or is it just iOS at the moment, or what's the score with the app?
No, it's accessible on both iOS and Android, and I can tell, I mean, usually I just use mine on my iPhone, but I can tell you that the iPhone one is, the Noah Companion app is completely accessible. Every single button in that app is labeled correctly. And just, you know, on the price, Jackie, sorry, I'm just going to run back very quickly to it.
Yeah.
I mean, there is, trust me, I have used, I'm not saying I've used every single gadget under the sun, but there is nothing, and I mean nothing, like Noah on the market at this moment in time. So yeah, I just thought I'd get that, and trust me, there's nothing like that on the market.
And it's really important to get differing views. You're a completely blind person, and you know, if you're recommending Noah as something that you can get around with, I mean, we've talked on this program a lot about wearable devices, wearable technology, and of course, upcoming is Glide, and you know, each of them has their place in the market. So we'll just have to watch this space and see where Noah goes. But if anybody wants any more information, you can either listen to Stuart's set of podcasts called NoahCast, or you can contact Sight and Sound Technology, and their number is 01604 798 070, and their website is sightandsound.co.uk. Stuart, thank you so much for talking to Tech Talk today.
Pleasure. Thanks very much, Jackie.
Let's catch up with some of your emails then. We've had an email in from Patrick, who says, "Hi team, I'm having trouble with my Meta Ray-Bans." We're back on these again. "I'm having trouble with my Meta Ray-Ban smart glasses. I recently received an email from Meta explaining that I could set reminders to prompt me to do something at a certain time. However, I've had no luck so far setting up this feature. Do any of the team use reminders on their Meta glasses and know how to go about setting this up?" So I haven't heard about this, but we got this email in and I tried it. And I said, set a reminder in 10 minutes to, I don't know, put the bins out. I can't remember what I said, but something like that. And it said, "Sorry, I don't support reminders." But the tone in which it said it, I wish I'd have recorded it, because it kind of went, "Sorry, I don't support reminders." Almost like a, "I don't do that. What sort of a voice assistant do you think I am?" Reminders.
I've tried it myself as well, and it kind of said, "I can't do that yet, but I'm improving every day." And so, okay.
Yeah, that's I got something similar.
Because it does do timers. I found that. You can set a timer for, you know, if you're, I don't know, if you're cooking or something. And that does work. But again, yeah, I think you need to be wearing the glasses. It does come through as a notification from the Meta app that your timer's done. But I think that's just so that it can, just a way of making it so that it can kind of ping your glasses, if you know what I mean. I think there maybe has to be something there for it to be able to alert you like that. But I'm not sure, to be honest, Patrick, whether that's, I mean, I'm not sure where you are in the world. I kind of assume in UK, but whether that's a, it could be, there's a lot of US only features at the minute. So whether it's that. But if it is available where you are, then I'm sure it's, often these things are done in kind of a phased rollout. So yeah, so I imagine it's probably doing that. So I would keep trying, to be honest. I'd make sure your app is up to date, make sure your glasses are up to date, and just a bit like with the look and tell feature that we've had, just every now and again, just try asking it and see what you get. Andrew has also been in touch. He says, "Hi Tech Talk, I have a suggestion after hearing your recent chat about finding your rubbish bin in the street. You could attach a NaviLens code to your bin, and this would mean that you can scan your phone in the street and find it really quickly and easily. Hope you find this suggestion useful." Yeah, that's a good point. I have considered doing that, NaviLens. Either of you tried this?
That is a good, it's interesting, but it's going to, again, depend on whether you've got a smartphone, whether you're able to use one. But if you are, that is a good call, yeah.
Yeah, I am going to try and find a way to do this, I think. Finally, for now, we've also had an email in from Graham, who says, "I wanted to get in touch with you following the chat about the accessibility issues in the Hive Home app." He says, "I have V13.1. launched on the App Store on the 27th of May, and unfortunately I found that the app is currently not accessible. This has also been acknowledged by Hive themselves, which is always good to know. If you simply want to adjust your current temperature control at that moment, this function does work. However, if you want to do more advanced functions, such as manage your heating schedule, change when your lights turn on and off, etc., then unfortunately you're out of luck at this stage. I've raised this issue with Hive via email and also via their reviews on Trustpilot. In the response to my review, Hive told me the following," and this is a quote I assume directly from Hive, "The accessibility issues with VoiceOver on iOS have been escalated to our back-end development team. While we don't yet have a timeline for a resolution, we want to assure you we are actively working on it. So that's always good to know. There is a bit more there as well, but essentially Hive are aware of the concerns and they are working on them to get them addressed. So really good to know. Thanks for letting us know about that, Graham. And thanks for raising it with them as well. It just shows, you know, we really can change these if we just get in touch. I know it's frustrating and, you know, it can kind of feel like, oh, you know, another app that's inaccessible, but it is important, isn't it, guys, to just let developers know about this.
Yeah, I always say that, you know, at the end of the day, okay, they may not reply or they may, you never know, but in my opinion, if you don't really contact the developer to tell them about these accessibility issues, then you can't really moan about them, because at the end of the day, if the only way you can attempt to fix them is let the developers know. Some developers maybe don't keep an eye on accessibility as much as they should be doing. So sometimes a little nudge in the right direction will help. And you don't. The good thing is you don't always have to be massively technical with them. Sometimes if you describe the issue in the basics, they can then go off and find out more technical information. And equally, if you are technical and they ask some more follow-up questions, you can help them out too. But, you know, there's no requirement for you to provide a technical breakdown of the accessibility issues. You can be as simplistic as you want. So long as you make them aware that this is an issue, I think it's always worth a shot.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for that, Graham. And if you can, keep us posted as well for when that gets resolved.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Site Village exhibitions are an opportunity for people to come together to find out more about products and services aimed at the blind and partially sighted community. The biggest event of the year heads back to Birmingham this summer. Rose Woodall, Site Village Events Coordinator from QAC, joins me now. Rose, welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, thank you for doing this interview.
Well, what can we expect from Site Village Central this year?
Well, Site Village Central is over the 2 days. So it's Monday the 7th of July and Tuesday the 8th of July. Most tables have sold, so there's only a few tables left, which is great. And yeah, it's just going to be packed the same as last year. Lots of exhibitors, seminars taking place. We've got a bit of filming going on at Site Village, which won't impact the visitors. So lots going on.
And are there any exhibitors that you're particularly excited to welcome to the event this year?
Yeah, so we've got a new international exhibitor. So we've got Be My Eyes. So they're coming to Birmingham and London, which is great. We've got a couple of new ones, BI Social, Care and Support. So we'd like to welcome them to Site Village. So that'd be great.
Site Village exhibitions take place right across the country. For people who haven't been to one before, what's the difference between attending in person and maybe just looking at some of the exhibitors online? I've seen it described as a sensory-rich environment. Is that right?
Yeah, it is exactly that. And I think you can see products online, but at Site Village you can come, you can demonstrate, you know, you can talk one-to-one with someone, and you can try out the equipment and, you know, go in seminars and ask questions. So it's a lot more personal coming actually in person, because you'll have that, you know, you can ask all them questions and touch and demonstrate the equipment, which is great.
And you're back in Birmingham for Site Village Central in July. Where's the event taking place this year?
So it's at Eastside Rooms, the same as last year. That's in the centre of Birmingham, and that's on Woodcock Street in Birmingham. All the details can be found on the website, the postcode, the opening times. So, yeah, if you came along last year, it's the same venue, which is really accessible, large venue. And as I said, with a couple of seminar rooms, and people can purchase refreshments while they're there, so they can make a day of it.
Well, like many of the other Site Village events so far this year, you'll be holding seminars at Site Village Central, away from the main hall, in a quieter space to hear about lots of different things. What can you tell us about some of the speakers?
Yeah, so we've got some really good seminars. We've got a mixture of seminars this year. So we've got traveling as a VIP, Smart Canes are doing a presentation. We've got a presentation from Be My Eyes, which is the power of AI and working in the world to make it more accessible. And we've got another one, which is removing barriers for people, for young people to learn. So, and that's only a few, but again, they're all on the website and people can tick the box and sign up for the seminars if they wish to attend.
And if people can't make it to Birmingham in July, where are the other Psych Village events taking place later in the year?
So on the 16th of September, we're back in Blackpool. We went to Blackpool last year. That was the first time we had been there. It was very popular at the Winter Gardens. So we're back there in September, 16th September. And then we're looking forward to our two-day event in London in November, which is the 18th and the 19th.
Well, some dates for your calendar there. Entrance is free, of course, to Psych Village events, but you do recommend registering before you arrive. Rose, how can people do that and also find out a bit more about Psych Village Central?
Yeah, so people can go onto our website, which is qacpsychvillage.org.uk, and they can. There's a link on there that tells them about all the events in 2025, and they can book tickets. They can book as many tickets as they want, and as you said, the tickets are free. Alternatively, they can call me and I can book the tickets on 0121 803 5313.
Well, we'll look forward to Psych Village Central at the East Side Rooms in Birmingham on Monday the 7th and Tuesday the 8th of July. Rose Woodall from QAC, thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Okay, thanks very much.
Now on RNIB Connect Radio to talk about how we use technology, and every one of us uses technology in so many different ways to get things done or to enjoy themselves for leisure or work. Today we are speaking to a very familiar voice to RNIB Connect Radio listeners, because it's the man behind the Jazz Club. Mr. Jake Hart joins us. Jake, thank you for coming on.
Ah, thank you so much for inviting me.
Now then, you're a low vision user, so, you know, be interesting to see how you use tech, because assistive technology maybe doesn't feature as much, but technology features in everyone's lives, let's face it. So how do you make technology work for you?
I think for me, it's about finding a way to use technology to make my life as easy as possible. Obviously, I don't use assistive technology in the traditional way, but what I do use is your sort of everyday apps in a way that means I can cover all my bases. So whether it's on a night out, I might use certain traveling apps to help me consider the best journeys, or for finding events I want to go to. I try and use non-assistive technology to my advantage in a way that kind of organizes my life, really.
When it comes to technology for work or studying, you've done both, obviously. You work, you study. You know, what tech have you used to make, you know, certain bits of your work or studying more accessible?
Of course. I mean, well, whenever I'm using just a computer for anything such as music notes or researching or putting running orders together, for me, just being able to make the screen larger is so helpful. A lot of Windows computers, I simply, whenever I log into a computer for the first time, I go in and enhance the screen size. People often look at my computer and they go, whoa, that's all massive. And for me, it takes so much strain out of my eyes. A big part of my visual impairment is fatigue, because my eyes obviously have to work quite a bit harder to digest information. So honestly, just making a screen bigger and making the text bigger takes so much stress away from my life, really, in that respect. And then in terms of if I'm reading really, really big pieces of text, I do actually sometimes put it into a text-to-speech software, and that can really, really help me, just takes away some of the strain from my eyes. And in terms of studying and work, I'd say the main thing is really just being able to take any of that fatigue away. I mentioned earlier, obviously, making text bigger, but just anything like that that allows me to sit further back in my chair and not have to lean forward and have a horrible posture.
Now, one of the main things that you are known for on RNIB Connect Radio, of course, is the Jazz Club. And one of the many things these sorts of shows involve is be able to look for and find music, new and old. So what sort of technology do you use to discover music, whether it's jazz or, well, any other genre?
I find finding music for the Jazz Club a really interesting experience, because I remember when for my sort of first, I don't know, maybe 15 shows, I had a big jazz playlist. And I was, you know, dipping into that, finding loads of music, using all that music. And then I got to a point where I went, OK, I've kind of exhausted my library a little bit. I need to sort of diversify it, find some new tracks, find some different kind of jazz as well. And I thought to myself, well, look, how can I do this? I don't really want to strain my eyes looking on a million different search engines. So I started looking at collated playlists. So, for example, compilation albums, it's all in one place. And that really reduces the strain for my eyes. As well as that, even on social media, I would scroll through social media and someone might put a song over their music, just kind of being able to use any part of the internet as a way to find new inspiration. But also any kind of compilations really helps me. For example, a big part of the jazz club for me, usually around the sort of fifth track, I like to play jazz from across the world. And to find that, I'll go on YouTube, for example, and I might put in, say, oh, I played like a Kenyan jazz song recently. So I go onto YouTube, put in Kenyan jazz playlist, and it's all there collated, and I can go through it at my leisure and find that new music, but in a way that doesn't exhaust my eyes, and in a way that really just makes it so much easier to have that control over how I diversify the show.
The other aspect of loving music, of course, is going to music gigs, which you do quite a bit. Now, I can think of so many aspects to a gig where technology can come in handy in so many ways. So when you go to gigs, before and after and during, what sort of technology do you use to help you there?
Of course. Well, I love live music. It is honestly one of my favourite things to do. My ideal night out is go to a pub and then go to see a great gig. Usually, preferably the gig in the pub would always be the favourable situation. But finding live music is important. I often would go on my favourite venue's website, and that's great, being able to go to all the individual websites. But I found sort of, you know, London is, I live in London, London is such a big city, and I guess collating it all is quite a difficult thing, and I never want to miss out on a good night. So for me, I use an app called Dice. And obviously there's the sort of big websites like Ticketmaster, Eventbrite, all those things. But I find Dice is very, very user-friendly. It's perfect for using on a phone, in that it's the layout and the sort of user, accessibility is incredible. Obviously, you know, I enlarge the text on my phone so I can read it all on that app perfectly. But it just collates everything really helpfully. For example, I can put in, okay, I want to see what gigs are about from the 6th to the 7th of June. And I want to do one in East London and I want it to be this genre. And it brings it all together. And that makes it so much easier. Often I'll just like certain gigs, as in literally, you know, like it like a social media post. And it will be like, well, if you enjoyed this, you'll enjoy that. And obviously I have to say, when I go to gigs, I love anything loud, grungy, noisy, anything that will sort of make your ears hurt at the end. Because I've gone to specific gigs, it'll recommend me gigs like that. And it just means I can always find the next thing to do. And just being able to collate it like that is so, so helpful. And I've honestly had some of the best nights out ever from that app's recommendations.
Let's talk about tech more in general. Now, for me as a techie, that question is quite, well, either impossible to answer or one that the answer to would change on a regular basis. What technology is currently making the biggest difference in your life right now as we speak?
It's got to be anything that I can use to help me with traveling. Often we're going from sort of nights out to getting home from a night out. I use the Trainline app. I use Google Maps. I go on Google and I just, you know, put in how do I get from here to here. And that is so, so helpful for me. For me, being visually impaired, nights out traveling can give me a little bit of anxiety. You know, it's always that, especially because I live in Greater London, so transport isn't always the best, and it is that sometimes that anxiety can play a bit of a big role in that. If you don't know how to get home, that can be quite scary, obviously visual impairment making that slightly worse. So for me, apps like Trainline, being able to really plan my journey on my phone, is so helpful. For example, if I'm at a gig in East London, I will first go on Google Maps, go on City Mapper even, and I'll be like, right, how do I get from, let's say, Bethnal Green to Morden Station, which is the sort of nearest tube for me? Brilliant. I've got that journey planned out. Okay, it's a Thursday night, so the tubes aren't running all night. When's my last tube? Brilliant. Fantastic. I've got that information. When's the second to last tube? When's the third to last tube? Just to be on the safe side. Okay, brilliant. And then after that, I'll go, brilliant. Is there any overground I can find to get there? What makes my journey easiest? What's the walking distance? Is there a nearer station I can go to? And for me, things like Google Maps, City Mapper, Trainline is always really helpful. But also, to be honest, I tend to use sort of Uber, Bolt, any kind of taxi app if need be, because obviously sometimes, you know, if I want to enjoy a drink or two being visually impaired, that can be a bit of a cumbersome situation. So having easy access to that kind of transport is so helpful. So anything like that, anything that gives me clarity, those kind of train line apps are so helpful. And obviously knowing what platform to go to, all this kind of information. I think with the kind of main thing with any of the technology that I use to help me navigate my life with a visual impairment, it's information. And I find the apps I use just gives me information. And that is crucial. I just need all the information I can kind of put to my disposal, however you word it, and then I can go about things. So it's getting that clarity, and that's, I think, what technology does so usefully for me.
Yes, information equals knowledge, and knowledge equals power, indeed. Right, let's have a bit of a trip into the past, shall we? Or kind of into the past slash revival of the past. If there's a piece of technology you'd like to see revived, you know, maybe something that isn't really used much these days, but has so much appeal and it's such an attractive piece of technology, what would it be?
Oh, something like a little Walkman, some kind of cassette player. I love physical media. Maybe it's because I'm being visually impaired. Maybe I just kind of enjoy tactile media more. But I'd love that, to hold my records, to kind of feel a little cassette tape and really feel like I've got the music right there. And just the sort of feeling of putting it in the machine and kind of clicking it and locking it, all these things, and pressing the play button, that kind of physical element is so lovely. That I'd love to see that sort of come back a bit more. And it kind of is, to be honest. That sort of, you know, you get so many like 20-year-olds walking around with loads of kind of physical vintage media. But yeah, anything like that, especially being, you know, having a sight issue, I love things I can feel, that kind of tactile interaction with things.
I used to love, I had a portable Walkman that my dad gave me once as a present.
Wow.
And I loved it, especially for me, reading books on tape. I was recently talking to someone on the train randomly about a particular autobiography and how I read this biography on tape in 2011, at which point maybe books on tape were not really as popular. But to me, there's an appeal to listening to something on tape, definitely, and especially if it's something you can just clip to your belt, which Walkman often had that kind of a clip you can kind of clip to your belt buckle, and it has that nice appeal rather than the big portable-ish tape players that you kind of had to drag with you.
Yeah, of course. And it's that thing as well of having your music separate to your sort of your phone, your calling device, because that actually brings me back to a point I was just going to mention quickly. It's all good and well saying I've got all these things on my phone that I can use for accessibility, but my phone dies. My phone dies. Those apps kind of all go down the drain if my phone's dead. So it's funny. It's nice having all that kind of media separated into different things with music.
Power banks, my friend. Power banks. I always carry one on me for that very reason, because there was that one journey once where I was on the bus, and what basically happened is my phone was on 3%. And I knew for a fact that it was going to die before I get off the bus and walk home. So since then, I've always carried a power bank on me, just because you never know. Because although most likely you will not need it, when you do, it's there. Let's look into the future, shall we? I love this topic because it's such an open question, and yet everyone has a different answer. What would you like to see? What future developments would you like to see in technology? What piece of technology would you like to see develop in the future to help you with various aspects of your life? What would it be? You can be as creative as you want. I mean, it's tricky to say it won't happen, because we've seen many things that we didn't think would happen that already exist.
Well, that's such a hard question, really, because I oh gosh, you stumped me with that one, to be honest. I don't know. I mean, anything to do with any kind of travel technology would be amazing. I mean, I'd love to see, you know, some tubes, some trains, the sort of verbal announcements aren't always very loud or aren't always very clear, or some, you know, some buses don't even have them sometimes. So I guess any way of making traveling a very audible experience would be amazing. More kind of verbal things, yeah, but more kind of things being read out, that would be fantastic. Like, I'd love to I'd love to sort of have more train announcements that say, this is this station, this is part of this line, like more regularly. I don't know, anything like that. But I mean, just anything that keeps my phone working fast and better batteries, that's all I can really think of. But there's a lot of different things, really. I'm sure all my answers will come to me later on, but I'd say that's what comes to mind right away.
Yes, I think There's all sorts of things that you can possibly imagine. You know, there's some people that say, I'd like to see teleportation invented, which I think, although a fair enough request, I think that's something we may be waiting a while
for. Oh, no, I enjoy a long tube journey. I put my music in. Oh, it's lovely.
That's what I do. I purposefully pick a train journey that is 8 minutes or 7 minutes longer than the one I can actually take, purely for the reason that I can listen to a few more songs and drink my coffee. So,
100%. Oh gosh, that's the dream. I'm getting on a train to Liverpool soon, and I'm very, very excited. The music's going in. Some jazz records going to be played. It's going to be very nice.
Yeah, and depending on where I'm going, I've got, you know, different playlists that can probably help as well. So yeah, that is, I mean, we could be talking for much longer, but that is our bit of a tech timeline chat. If you would like to talk about your use of technology throughout life and the future, then you can let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is your usual email address. Mr. Jake Hart from the Jazz Club, before I let you go, why don't you plug your show?
Well, of course. The Jazz Club, Friday, 6 p.m, repeated Saturday, 8 p.m. I've got some lovely, lovely records coming up soon, all kinds of jazz. And as I say on the show many times, you may think to yourself, OK, I'm not a big fan of jazz, but that's because you haven't heard the jazz that's exactly right for you. I play all kinds of different jazz funk, bit of smooth jazz, even Kenyan jazz, as I mentioned earlier, even a cheeky bit of contemporary jazz. Give it a listen and you may just find your new favourite jazz record or favourite record.
Mr. Jake Hart, the man behind the Jazz Club, thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Tech Talk.
That's it from us this week. That's all we've got time for. Thank you so much for tuning in and being with us as always. If you like what you heard, do share it around as well. We really appreciate that. And as always, if you want to get in contact with us, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. is our email address. We'll be back with you next week, but from me, Callum Stoneman, Jackie Brown and Hubert Provakovich, bye for now.
Bye for now.
Until next time.
See ya.